Tonight, I wanted to explore the idea of heroines. What makes someone a hero or heroine? Our journey this evening will begin by looking into the Hanukkah story through a unique portal, that of women in the Hanukkah story. So please join me as we go back in time. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, as recorded in the Gemara Shabbos, Daf Chaf Gimel, states, Nashim chayavos b'ner Chanukah she'af hein hayu be'oso hanes. Women are obligated in the candle of Chanukah because they also were part of that same miracle. The Gemara is responding to a question. Are women obligated in the mitzvah of Chanukah? As we know, the mitzvah of Chanukah, lighting the menorah, is a mitzvah saseh, shehazman grama. It's a time-bound mitzvah. And the question in the Gemara is, are women bound in this time-bound mitzvah? Sha'af hein hayu ba'oso hanes. They were part of this miracle. How do we understand this phrase? One opinion in the Gemara is that women were subjugated as were the men, and they were saved alongside them in the miracles of the day. However, there is another opinion, and the opinion posited is that women actually brought about the nes. Women played a heroic role in the Hanukkah story. So I think that it's instructive to delve deeper to understand what is it about these women that we can learn about in terms of understanding the idea of being a hero or being a heroine. So I'd like to pause for a moment and ask your indulgence. Please take a moment and think about a hero or heroine in your life. Someone who really represents that idea. And then think about why. Why are they a hero or heroine to you? So in our exploration of this idea of hero and heroines, we're going to take a look at the Hanukkah story. And I'm sure that these stories are stories that are familiar to you, but we're going to look at them tonight through a unique lens. So in addition to the decrees against observing Kashrus, Rosh Chodesh, Shabbos, Bris Milah, the Greeks understood the value of the Jewish family and the purity of the Jewish family. They decreed that before each young woman would get married, she had to spend a night intimately with the ruler of the city. Rashi comments that when this decree was issued, it was a woman who brought about the miraculous rescue. The Otzer Midrashim expands the story and tells us about a woman named Yehudit. There are several versions of the story. There are Midrashim, and there is a story about Yehudit that we are very familiar with. The story of a widow who, as the Gemara explains, was a sister of the Kohen Gadol, Yochanan Kohen Gadol, which makes her the sister of Matisyahu. She was so moved and so agitated that she couldn't stand by quietly as young Jewish women were taken the night before their wedding. She went with her maidservant to the gates of Yerushalayim and asked the people of the gate to let her exit the city, hoping that Hashem would perform a miracle on her behalf. The Mishnah Berurah comments that this was a very powerful woman. There are different versions of the Medrash, and we'll first look at one and then the other. In one version of the Medrash, she persuaded the ruler that her allegiance was to him. The ruler, in his desire for her, drank the wine that she gave him, ate the cheese that she fed him, and when he fell asleep, like Ya'el in Sefer Shoftim, Yehudit severed his head. She brought it back to Yerushalayim. Initially, she was greeted with great disdain. She was accused of illicit behavior. When she showed them, she opened her bag, and she showed them the ruler's severed head. They shouted, Shema Yisrael. When the Greeks heard the triumphant cry and saw that their ruler had been beheaded, they fled, and the Jews were victorious. Another version of the Yehudit story is something that I had never heard before. She, as a young woman, in this version of the Medrash, was so disturbed about what was happening to her that her brothers came to her in her home, and she actually disrobed and was unclad. And her brothers were horrified at seeing her in this state. And they were ready to accuse her and to punish her for the way she was presenting herself to them. When she saw how agitated they were, she turned to them and said, "This is how incensed you should be about what is happening to Jewish women at this time." They heard her, and they went with her, alongside her, as she was being escorted to the ruler of the time. The ruler didn't quite figure out what was going on, thought that here, this young bride is now being escorted by these young men because they are supportive of this idea of her being with him. And when they were allowed entry into his home, they severed his head, and the Jews were victorious. The Shulchan Aruch in Orach Chaim states that to commemorate Yehudit's bravery, many women have the custom not to work during the first 30 minutes that the Hanukkah candles are burning. So please note that for yourselves. The Ramah states that there are those who eat cheese and dairy products to remember how the miracle of Yehudit happened through milk and cheese. There is another heroine, Hannah. Hannah, whose name is supposed to allude to us, to make us think of Hannah from Sefer Shmuel. Hannah, who encouraged each of her sons to defy the governor of Judea. Each son was gruesomely tortured, as each one refused to abandon the Torah. One after the other, they were killed in front of the remaining brothers, while Hannah encouraged them to defy the governor and stand by Hashem and the Torah. The youngest son, the last son, refused to bow down to retrieve the governor's signet ring, a ploy to have him bow down to an idol. Hannah spoke out, "My children, when you arrive in heaven, tell your ancestor Abraham, you bound only one son upon the altar, but I bound seven." The story of Hannah concludes in a very unusual way. The Medrash records that she jumped off the roof. It's a disturbing ending, but I think if one understands who Hannah was and really identifies with the passion and the perseverance under tremendous persecution, one understands that she was really the next in line. And it wasn't as an act of giving up her life in an inappropriate way, but rather she martyred herself al Kiddush Hashem. I remember when I was a new mother, I was teaching at the Manhattan High School for girls, and the girls were having a school performance. The teachers were asked to supervise the performances, and I was sitting at one of the practices. I was sitting in the audience watching the girls singing and dancing, and one of the acts that they were performing was the story of Hannah and her seven sons. As a mother of my first son, I began to weep, thinking about the pain and bravery of this woman who watched as son after son refused to bow down, sacrificing themselves al Kiddush Hashem. And finally, the women of Klal Yisrael are described as being at the forefront of the struggle for keeping the mitzvah of Bris Milah. They struggled mightily and sacrificed themselves to uphold this mitzvah. There are graphic quotes in the book of Maccabim describing how the women died as martyrs, keeping this mitzvah despite the great risk to their lives. There are even those who suggest that Hanukkah is celebrated for 8 days in commemoration of the victory in the struggle to keep this mitzvah of Bris Milah, the struggle led by these holy women. So let's return to our original question. What is a hero? What is a heroine? Bill Moyers, a well-known journalist, interviewed a famous writer and thinker, Joseph, in case you're going to Google it, Joseph, not John, Joseph Campbell. Campbell wrote a book titled Heroes with 1,000 Faces. Bill Moyers asked Campbell, why are there so many stories of the hero in mythology? Campbell replied, "Even in popular novels, the main character is a hero or heroine who has found or done something beyond the normal range of achievement and experience. A hero is someone who has given his or her life to something bigger than oneself." Moyers, "So in all these cultures, whatever the local costume the hero might be wearing, what is the deed?" Campbell responds, and I think it's so fascinating in light of our discussion tonight about Yehudit and Chana. He says, "Well, there are two types of deed. One is a physical deed, in which the hero performs a courageous act in battle or saves a life. The other kind is a spiritual deed, in which a hero learns to experience a supernormal range of human spiritual life and then comes back with a message. The heroism of Yehudit is one of strength, of the external nature, of a physical deed, a mission out of her safe space. She put herself at great risk to reach the ruler and kill him in cold blood. Chana's bravery was that of a spiritual nature, directed internally toward her family and her sons. She exhibited supernatural strength, going beyond herself and her deep maternal feelings to encourage sacrifice for Torah and Hashem." Campbell summarized his thoughts. "A hero is someone who has given his or her life to something bigger than oneself." Another hero watcher and seeker is Philip Zimbardo. He's best known for his Stanford prison experiment conducted in 1971. Zimbardo took a group of volunteers and he randomly assigned them to either guard or prisoner roles. He was really trying to explore this idea of brutality. Is brutality due to a person's natural tendency, or is brutality due to a situation? The volunteer prisoner guards acted violently as they slipped into their roles. The violence escalated, and the experiment actually had to be stopped 6 days into a 2-week experiment. He was incredibly disturbed by the results of his study. But he didn't stop there. Zimbardo founded the Heroic Imagination Project. Zimbardo states, "Heroism is not only those who perform extraordinary deeds or take impulsive risks to protect themselves or others. Heroism is a mindset or an accumulation of our personal and social habits. It is a way of being, and it's a special way of viewing ourselves. To be a hero requires taking effective action at crucial junctures in our lives to make an active attempt to address challenges or create positive change in the world. To be a hero requires great moral courage," Zimbardo says, "and each one of us has an inner hero waiting to be expressed. We are all heroes in training. Our hero training is life, the daily circumstances that invite us to practice the habits of heroism, to commit daily deeds of kindness, to radiate compassion, starting with self-compassion, to bring out the best in others and in ourselves, to celebrate and exercise the power of our mental freedom." Zimbardo went further. He designed a program to use social psychology not just to study behavior, but really to understand it and to teach hero behavior. And he created a curriculum that's now being taught. And he created tools, what he calls tools for action. The idea of mapping a social situation and being able, that each person is able to hit a pause button, to actually think through what they're doing. And he posits it like this. He says that we have an idea called the power of one, that each person has the ability to step forward, to be the first to step forward. And then he talks about the power of two, that one should be an ally to others, that it's not just to stand by idly, but empower others by coming forward and coming alongside them. And then the power of three, the idea of using group psychology to promote pro-social behavior. We use the expression by Yamim Haheim Bazman Hazeh, in those days, in this time. Literally, the words mean that these events happened in those days at this same period of time. But I'd like to suggest tonight, as others had suggested before, that it means what happened in those days can happen in these times. In light of Hanukkah and our exploration of the role of heroes, the words of Viktor Frankl, a psychologist who survived Auschwitz, are particularly poignant. He says, "Everything can be taken from man but one thing, the last of the human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way. Each moment is a choice. We can't choose to vanish the dark, and how appropriate for Hanukkah, but we can choose to kindle the light." This external and internal struggle for our spirituality is Bazman Hazeh. We're pushed and pulled in many directions, and we're trying to find our role, our unique way as women to contribute to the building of our homes and the building of our people. We look to our heroines of the Hanukkah story, Yehudis and Chana, who went beyond themselves to message to us today, Bizman Hazeh, to find our personal leadership voice and our communal role to become closer to Hashem, to feel connected to each other as religious women. So I'm going to ask you again to think, to pause for a moment, think about the hero or heroine that you thought about earlier, and think about now, in light of what we've spoken about, what does make them a hero? Is it something external? Is it something internal? Is it that they've stood up as leaders by themselves, as themselves? Is it that they came to someone else's aid? Is it that they realized the power of a group, the power of the sisterhood, and realize that each person can make a choice? Each person is a hero in training. So my brother spoke about two role models in our lives, my grandmother, my grandma, and my bubby. And I would suggest that they were heroines for me. And using this idea, this construct of external and internal, I think each of them contributed greatly to who I am, who our family is today. My grandma, some of you may have known her, Rebbetzin Elaine Wolf. She was the Rebbetzin alongside my grandfather, Rabbi Dr. Ephraim Wolf. They were Rabbi and Rebbetzin in Malden, Massachusetts, then in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, and then finally in Great Neck. And my grandmother's role was that of an external nature. She interacted with congregants, with her students. She taught at the John F. Kennedy Public School, and she impacted so many people. I remember very late in her life, she was well into her 80s, she and I were talking, and she shared that somebody had called her up, a rabbi, and said to her, "Rebbetzin, I have a job for you, and you're the only one who can actually take care of this." To which she was like, "Okay, great." And she said, "Okay, how can I help you?" And this man proceeded to tell her that there were two people in the community, a father and a son, who had not spoken to each other for 20 years. And he tasked my grandmother with the task, the goal, of bringing peace between these two people. My grandmother said to me, "I think I am too old for this." But that didn't stand in her way. She called up the father and she said to him, and he was a very, very, very elderly gentleman. He was older than she was, than my grandmother was. He actually outlived my grandmother. And said to him, we'll call him Harry, "Harry, you are going to pass soon. And if you want your son to say Kaddish for you, you need to reach out to him." And then she called up the son and she said to him, and what should we name him? Gary. "Gary, if you want your dad to go to the world of, to the eternal world, you are going to need to be able to say Kaddish for him. And you are going to need to make peace with him, like our own, going to one, going to the other." We have a family in Bala Cynwyd. It's the great-grandson of, what did we name him? Harry? Harry, okay. Harry's grandson and great-grandson, now there's a grandson with his family live in our community. They don't know that I know. But when I saw Gary bring Harry to visit their children and grandchildren, wow. That was the power of my grandmother being able to take her strengths that she was given and reach out and connect in an external way to this family and impact them. My bubby, and they were definitely, and I would say, truthfully, the construct needs to be played with a little bit because I think everybody has internal and external, strengths. So I'm sort of highlighting for each one just to sort of, it's a speech, so we have to sort of set this up. But my bubby, had strengths in an internal way. I remember when we speak about her. Certainly, when she was living, we would always, ask her to bring with her Bubby Kugel, Bubby cookies, all these foods, Bubby eggs. Everything was called Bubby. Because her kitchen was the way that she expressed her warmth, her love, and her connection with her family. But it actually went further. When my grandparents came in 1941 from Switzerland via Vichy France, Portugal, and then across the Atlantic Ocean to Ellis Island, she was the one who organized the kosher kitchen on the boat. So it wasn't just about taking care of her immediate family, but it was about taking care of her extended family through this internal, motherly, compassionate way. So to sort of bring us to the to today, in my new role at the Orthodox Union, or as my son said, I don't like the way Orthodox Union sounds. Say OU. Okay. So in my new role at the OU, this is the goal. Through Torah, through leadership opportunities, and through programs, we can hopefully find our own personal heroines and heroes within us that we can be bigger than ourselves and contribute greatly. So I'd like to take the remaining time that we have together tonight and use it to describe the goals and intentions of this new Department of Women's Initiatives. The idea is to capture the spirituality in our lives as women, to find each one of us, our unique personal leadership voice, to lead ourselves, our families, our homes, to find our communal leadership voice, to lead in our communities, and to create a strategic plan so that women can be afforded opportunities for innovation, integration, and growth within Orthodox parameters. There are four areas of intent that we are developing, and I think it helps to inform the community as to what the goals are for the program. There are four areas. The areas are Torah, leadership, programs, and standards. So I'd like to take a few moments to just elaborate on each one of those. The idea of Torah in light of this department is to afford women opportunities to study, to learn, to teach in a way that is a high level and sophisticated and in a sophisticated way. We're looking at developing programs such as One Safer, One Community so that we can all learn something together. In the area of leadership, we're looking at exploring communal leadership opportunities, leadership training, board training, so that when women step forward, they are afforded excellent leadership skills. And we're also looking at developing training and support for Rebbetzins. In that note, we're actually very excited that we're partnering with Yeshiva University in a program that was launched 2 years ago. It's the Rebbetzin Elaine Wolf, Alei HaShalom, Rebbetzin to Rebbetzin Mentoring Program. It's a program that's being funded by my parents, and it's a very exciting program where we're pairing experienced Rebbetzins with less experienced Rebbetzins. The first year we actually took first-year Rebbetzins. Now we're actually just opening it up to those women who want mentorship, because Rebbetzins are in unique leadership positions in communities, but really have not been afforded the opportunity to put things, if you will, in their toolbox. And so we're very excited to help Rebbetzins develop those skills. In terms of programming, we're looking at launching programming that addresses issues that are unique to women, issues of mind, body, and soul, exploring unique concerns of women, medical concerns of women, and really trying to address women's needs. We're looking at creating a listening tour. So this is the first opportunity that I have to really take my show on the road, if you will. So thank you for that opportunity. And to really hear what women are saying. What are the needs? What are the concerns? What are the challenges? And to provide that listening ear for women. We're looking at creating a grant initiative program so that we can seed programs that are being developed or that are, at this point, just ideas, and to be able to take them into reality, because we know that communities have ideas and we want to hear them. And finally, we're looking at the area of standards and creating standardized programs for CALA teacher training, standardized programs to create standardization for mikvah attendant training, so that women know that each one of these areas, areas of leadership, areas of women's participation in the community, each one of these things is being done with care, with sensitivity, with listening, and with a woman's interests and unique needs in mind. So to conclude, we've learned tonight a lot, and thank you for journeying with me into this area of heroes and heroines. Each one of us has the ability to be a heroine, to find that unique voice within oneself, to make choices to lead their personal lives, choices in their for their families, choices for their community. And again, I thank you for listening, participating, and for being here this evening. Thank you, and happy Hanukkah.